Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt podcast, your home for deer hunting news, stories, and strategies. And now, your host, Mark Kenyon.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kenyon. This is episode number 193, and today we are back with another Rut Radio episode in which we are catching up with a handful of hunters from all across the country this week to hear the latest on deer behavior, activity, conditions, and the tactics that are working right now in the late season. All right, welcome to another episode of the Wired to Hunt podcast. And today, as we do each week during the hunting season, we are here with a Rut Radio episode in which we are checking in with a bunch of different hunters across the country to get the latest on deer activity, deer behavior, how different sets of conditions are impacting deer hunting, and then find out what kind of tactics, what kind of strategies these guys and girls are trying out in the field right now. And we're kind of edging into late December almost now, getting into the real tail end of the late season, I suppose. And I'm sitting over here in Michigan having just one heck of a hunting season here, batting zero on everything I've tried to do. On the other side of the line with me, as he always is for Rut Radio, is Spencer Newharth, who has batted 1,000. He doesn't seem to miss on any hunt he goes on. And I don't know if you remember this. You know, we've talked recently about all the different ungulates he's killed. He's killed every different hooved, four-legged animal there is out there this season. But earlier this spring, if I'm getting this right, he killed a state record turkey of some sort. And I'll have Spencer elaborate on this a bit. So that was in the spring. And then this son of a gun thinks, hey, I've already killed all these other animals this fall. Why not try to kill another turkey? And he goes and kills the number three bird in the state. So, Spencer, I feel like I just need to like rub on your forehead or something, like figure out some way to get your karma to rub off on me. Cause every week I feel like I give you the same crap about this happening, whether it be an elk or a whitetail or a whatever, a mule deer. So now I don't know. It's absurd, Spencer. It's just absurd. But it's amazing. So well, what exactly did you do here?
Oh, back up to the spring. In South Dakota, we're unique, and then we have the three main species of turkeys. We have Rios, Merriams, and Easterns. And so I think it was right around Easter. It might have been Easter Day. In the spring, I killed the state record Rio Grande turkey with my bow. It was a triple beard and stuff. And then just, it was like 4 days ago, I killed an Eastern with my shotgun, which will be number three in the state for firearms Easterns. And so that was a double beard. And they're like once-in-a-lifetime turkeys, but especially for someone like myself, I'm kind of a lukewarm turkey hunter. Like, I'm a much better deer hunter, I think, than I am a turkey hunter. And I think about whitetails year-round. I don't think about turkeys year-round until I have a turkey tag in my pocket. And so I almost feel a little bit guilty that I probably don't appreciate these birds like somebody who is a turkey nut would, and it's how someone feels who hunts whitetails really hard and then sees the neighbor who goes out, you know, twice a year in their coveralls and then kills a booner. I feel like that's kind of what's happened here. So these were just very lucky encounters for me to get those two turkeys. And I don't want anyone to come away thinking that, like, I'm an exceptional turkey hunter. this was my fifth turkey of 2017, I guess. I am proud of that. But it was just shit chance that they had five birds between the two of them.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's awesome. I'm excited for you. I think there's just a lot of people that listen to this show that don't like you anymore. And I'll tell you what, here's the issue, is that I've got all these like sponsors of the Wired Hunt podcast, and I think coming up in 2018, there will be no sponsors related to Mark Kenyon, and everyone's going to, like, Spencer Newharth is going to be decked out with brand new camo, new bows, new truck. You're going to have, like, a new Ram truck and, like, a UTV from Yamaha, and everyone's going to catch on to the fact that you put them down, Spencer, so get ready for a flush of new emails.
Well, they're going to be disappointed because I don't see another Booner next year or any more Sayreker turkeys.
Well, enjoy it while you got it then, right?
I will. Well, Mark, you were just in Ohio hunting.
Yeah.
I am jealous you still get to do some deer hunting. So how was that for you?
You know, well, as my season goes, there was no tag filled. But, you know, I actually did see a little bit of something of interest to you and to our listeners. Two things, actually. Number one, I saw quite a bit of mature buck activity still on trail camera over the past week. So that would be like the 10th through the 18th or something. I had quite a bit of movement on trail camera, including two different mature bucks still moving in daylight. And actually in the morning, I was getting AM daylight pictures. One buck had, if I'm remembering this right, one of the mature bucks, a four-year-old, had him coming through one spot at like probably 45 minutes to an hour after daylight in the morning one day. And then another time, I had another mature buck. This was the day beforehand, coming through like 2.5 hours after daylight in the morning, which I was kind of surprised by. Lots of times these big bucks are, you know, back to bed very early in the morning in December, but this was not the case. So that was one thing of interest. Now, I will say that that movement coincided with a big cold front hitting, a very cold front that brought the coolest temperatures of the year yet, I think, for this area. So that maybe had something to do with it, possibly. Also, the first snow of the year down there. Not a lot of snow, but a little bit of snow right around that same time period. The second thing I noticed, this was on the second day of my hunt down there, I saw a lot of deer activity this evening, and what I think I saw was a fawn that was either in estrus or smelling enough like she was in estrus, because I had some like of that second rut activity that you hear about in December sometimes, where you get a fawn that's coming into estrus finally, you know, late. She's finally mature enough. I think that's what I was seeing, because I saw six or seven different bucks all chasing these does around, like bumping does all over the place. There was two bucks fighting. It was like a little rut fest right in this little area. I was watching all these deer start piling in, and bucks started coming out of all over the place, all came into the spot where these does were. And this little doe fawn, wherever she was going, there were these bucks coming. And then after dark, I had another buck coming, and you saw him come across this field, follow the exact trail that doe took, and followed her. I mean, like for 300-400 yards, I watched him follow the exact path that doe took all the way past my tree stand. So that was an interesting thing to see. I'm not saying that that's absolutely 100% what was going on there, but it sure seemed like that. You usually hear about, you know, this kind of thing happening in early December, if at all. In many cases, you don't see it at all. In this case, it was like December 16th, I think, was the night that I saw all this happening. So I don't know what was going on there, but it was an interesting observation.
Well, we'll hear a little bit of that secondary rut talk this week, but primarily a lot of it is about what food sources to focus on right now. And who we talk to in Minnesota is Mike Fitzgerald with bowhunting.com, and then we go to New Hampshire, and from the Whitetail Factor is Brett Joy. Then we talked to Lindsey Thomas Jr. of QDMA in Georgia. And then we talked to Mike Hunsucker of Heartland Bowhunter in Missouri.
Excellent. Well, I don't know. I'm excited to hear what we got going on. I don't know if I'm going to have any good news to share anytime soon. It's just not been in the cards for me this season, but I am going to try to get after some does here soon. So that'll be my next exciting hunt, I think, will be finally, hopefully, putting deer on the ground and putting some meat in the freezer. So look out for that, Spencer. My next exciting story will hopefully be a big mature doe soon. Do you have any advice for me?
No. Listen okay. Listen to Rut Radio. That's my best advice. There you go.
Okay. Well, then I guess I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to let you keep this show rolling, and I will tune in once it's finished and learn a thing or two about how to actually kill a deer, because I'd love to figure that out before the end of 2017.
All right. Well, this should turn things around for you then. Talk to you next week, Mark.
Thanks, buddy.
Before we get to our first update, though, let's pause to thank our sponsors at Sitka Gear. And for this week's Sitka story, we're joined by Brett Joy, who tells us about a memorable whitetail hunt that didn't go as planned.
Well, Ross and I have had a really challenging season this year, and I think one of the defining moments of that season was an encounter we had with a 5 or 6 year old buck in Kentucky that we called K2. I was actually filming Ross. We went into a specific area after K2. We hunted right there, and actually we had that deer come straight into the grunt call probably an hour after we got there. And he came straight into 5 yards and stopped, and Ross is at full draw on him. And, you know, in my head, I'm running the camera thinking this is a done deal. We just, you know, killed Ross's number one hitless buck in Kentucky this year. And I'm sure Ross had similar thoughts in his head. And we just needed him to turn broadside, and he did turn broadside. And as he did, Ross didn't want to take a walking shot, which is totally understandable from my perspective. And he just kind of bit at him real quick to stop him. And the second he heard that, he took off running. And Ross didn't get the shot, and we never ended up killing that deer. So it just shows you, you know, you think you got it all figured out, and you think you got one in the bag. And, you know, both the fact or the reality of bow hunting is that that's not the case, and you should never think like that. And it's a game of extreme highs and extreme lows, and that was definitely an extreme low for Ross and I that year.
On Brett's hunt, he was wearing Sitka's Fanatic system. If you'd like to create a Sitka story of your own, or to learn more about Sitka's technical hunting apparel, visit SitkaGear.com. All right, and joining me on the line first is Mike Fitzgerald in Minnesota with Bowhunter Die and Bowhunting.com. Now, Mike, in Minnesota, what would you say the buck activity has been lately on a scale of 1 to 10?
Scale 1 to 10, I'd probably say the last couple weeks, I'd put it probably 5 or 6. It has been slow, but we're starting to see a little bit of maybe secondary rut activity. I was visiting some family down in this Duluth area, and we actually watched a young buck chase a doe right through my brother's backyard. So there's still a little bit of activity going on, but we're definitely shifting into those late season patterns.
Now, you live in northern Minnesota in the big woods. What does the wintering ground there look like for deer? And what do those food sources look like as opposed to what they look like back in October or November?
Yeah, well, this time of year, they we're starting to get snow depths where it's harder for them to paw their way down to the ground. So even in areas where there are food plots, the ground's getting frozen, getting harder for them to attain those food sources. So we're starting to switch over to really woody browse. You know, clear cuts are golden this time of year. If you get a 3 or 4 year old clear cut, there's a ton of browse in there for them. And then there's usually along those edges, you get some thick cover too. And so when the cold weather moves through, that's a great place to be.
Now in the big woods, do you see the deer bunch up as they would in someplace like Iowa or Illinois?
It can be very, very different in a small geographical area. Right where I am, which is just a couple miles south of the town of Ely, we have a bunch of these clear cuts around here. There's a ton of good whitetail habit, a lot of browse for them. But you go 10, 15 miles north of me towards and into the boundary waters, and there's areas that the deer completely vacate during the winter. And then you get some big wintering yards. There's a couple different big wintering yard areas nearby here too, and so some of the deer stay put, but there's a number of them that'll completely migrate out of an area for the entire winter.
Now, with the big woods hunting bigger than they are, do you have trouble with gun pressure really suppressing the deer movement, or you don't feel that as much there in northern Minnesota?
I wouldn't say it's as much up here. I mean, relative to during the bow season, it's definitely an increase. But honestly, in the 9-10 years that I've been bow hunting exclusively up here, I've only seen a rifle hunter in the woods probably 3 times that whole time. So I certainly, compared to the vast majority of hunters across our beautiful country, I don't have much to complain about. But it's more pressure than they're used to getting. And a lot of times they can be a lot more susceptible to that pressure too. They just have a lot of area to roam. So if they have a bad encounter somewhere, they can, just as easily take a half mile route a different direction to get to wherever they're going. So,
but you guys are capable of reaching some really uncomfortable temperatures up there. How do you think that affects the deer movement when you hit those negatives and everything below zero?
Any creature, they acclimate to the temperatures around them. So, late in the winter, it doesn't affect them nearly as much. But this coming week, we have a big cold front moving through. This morning when I woke up, it was 30 degrees. By Tuesday, our high is negative 10. So we got a big cold front. It's going to be the first real deep freeze that we've had for the season. And for those first few, it's kind of like the first snowfall of the season. The very first one, a lot of times, they'll shut down for, a short period of time. So they're going to hold tight. They'll find some thick cover to help keep the wind off of them, to help keep the snow off of them, and to help maybe retain a little bit of heat. And they'll start bedding more on those south-facing slopes. So when the sun does come up, they warm quickly. But it slows it down, but it's only temporary. And like I said, by another month from now, we hit those temperatures and they won't think anything of it.
Well, you just referenced this coming week. How do you think that's going to look on a scale of 1 to 10 for buck movement there in northern Minnesota?
I'm going to probably say this next week, despite the cold, I'm going to say probably a 7. Like I said, we're starting to see a little bit of evidence of maybe a secondary rut going on. And once they, hunker down for that first 24 hours or so of that cold snap, it's just going to concentrate their movement following that. So I think it's going to be a good week to get out there and fill that freezer.
All right, Mike. Well, good luck with those last tags that you have, and good luck staying warm as well. Thanks for joining me.
I appreciate it, Spencer. Have a good one.
All right, and joining me on the line next is Brett Joy out of New Hampshire from Parallel 43 and the Whitetail Factor. Now, Brett, in New Hampshire, what would you say the buck activity has been lately on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'd say it's about a 5. I think especially in New Hampshire, we're in an interesting time frame because the deer have been pressured for the better part of 6 weeks with muzzleloader and rifle season. I will say our season just ended, so this may not be super pertinent to this year, but maybe next year, or if there's some surrounding states that are still open, might be helpful information. But I think a lot of the surrounding states are in similar situations. The Northeast traditionally has very long gun seasons through the rut that extend into December with no break. So I think there's kind of 3 key things here. The first is pressure, is trying to find areas that haven't been pressured, where the deer are moving naturally and without that intense pressure. If you can find those areas, the buck activity is going to be definitely higher. On my property that I hunt in New Hampshire, I had a few mature bucks using that property here at the end of the season and using my food plots, but there was all after dark or right at dark. So I have a lot of gun pressure on that area, and that definitely had impact on that movement. So if you're hunting pressured areas and you can't find any of those pockets that are unpressured, your movement is probably going to be lower than a 5. If you can find an unpressured pocket and a good food source, your activity could potentially be higher than 5. The other thing that I've got some reports on is second rut activity, which does occur. And so that kind of throws a curveball into the mix. But the good thing about that is I think that most of that centered around fed to food patterns anyway. So those bucks are going to be coming to food to check, you know, the fawns that might be coming in for the first time. So if you can, I don't think your strategy will change much, but it's just something to be aware of. You might see some activity. And actually, I just hunted in Ohio this past week, and I see a lot of the same stuff in the Northeast that I do in Ohio. And we saw multiple bucks checking does and coming to food sources, following does. Even I saw a big 5-year-old deer that I was trying to kill, and he was on a doe, and this was 2 nights ago. So I've heard similar reports of that. So you can still get some of that daylight activity if you get a buck that's locked on a doe or coming to check on a doe. So that may be a factor that will get them to come to food during daylight, especially if you don't have an area that's been highly pressured.
Well, let's say hypothetically that you have a tag and there's just a couple days of the season coming up here and you're in the Northeast and you have not been out hunting since maybe like Thanksgiving. What would your setup look like and how would it differ from, you know, like 3 weeks ago versus now if you haven't been out in a while?
I would be 100% focused on food sources, food and bedding. Bedding may come into account if the deer aren't getting to the food sources during daylight hours. If they aren't doing that, then I'd be trying to backtrack them during bedding. The really, really great thing we have, a lot of the Northeast has right now is snow cover, snowfall. So if you can get to a food source, it may be a hay field, it may be a crop field, probably not a crop field if you're in New England, but a food plot or an oak flat or an oak ridge or anything, maybe even a clear cut that's grown up with, you know, good browse. If you can find that preferred food source, you're going to see a ton of tracks, a ton of droppings in those right in the food source. And if you're not seeing, maybe sit at a night or two, if you're not seeing anything there during daylight, you know, it's been pressured, I'd backtrack those tracks back to the bedding area, and you're going to find pretty quickly where they're coming from. This time of year, they're not going to be moving that far from food to bed, so it's going to be pretty easy to figure out, I'd say. And if you can get in between the food and bed, you're going to be in good shape. And the closer to bedding on pressured deer, the better. I'd also be watching the wind, obviously, but I'd be very aggressive if I saw a deer on a pattern. You don't have much of the season left. Go out and after him immediately. Don't wait. This is not a time where you can wait if you don't have limited days left and you have a deer on a pattern. So a little bit different situation than maybe if I was in the Midwest where I had several weeks left and, you know, ample time to hunt.
Well, this year or historically, have you seen much for sign making in mid-December?
I do. I do see sign making or bucks making sign in December, mid-December. Traditionally, that's actually been a fairly good time of year to see that. Maybe not as prevalent as late October, but our rut in New Hampshire, our primary rut, our first rut, usually, I won't say it's later than anywhere else, but we see a lot more activity later maybe than some other places. So, you know, it's really hot from Thanksgiving through the first few days of December. We see a lot of sign then. There may be a little lull there, but then you have kind of the does that have come in late and then those yearlings coming in mid-December again for the second rut. So they almost kind of run together. So you'll see activity, you know, rut activity as far as sign making, rubs and scrapes really through most of December. Obviously that's, can be anecdotal. Not every property is going to have that, but I'm not at all surprised to see, you know, a fresh scrape in the snow or a rub with, you know, hemlock shavings on the top of the snow. I find that all the time in December.
Going forward then in this next week or so, what do you think that buck activity is going to be on a scale of 1 to 10?
I think it's going to probably remain pretty consistent for the next week or so. Like I said, that second rut activity will still be there. It's still going to be a, you know, name of the game will be finding food and bed and trying to figure out how they're relating to each other and how they're moving between the two. And obviously weather will help. The more snow and the more cold, the more of a pattern they're going to be on. And I think the more daylight active they'll be.
All right, Brett. Well, great intel and good luck on whatever's left of your season. Thanks for joining me.
Great. Thank you.
Before we get to our next caller though, let's pause to thank our sponsors at Whitetail Properties. And this week with Whitetail Properties, we are joined by Dave Skinner, a land specialist out of Kentucky. And Dave is going to be telling us about the advantages of using a land specialist as opposed to shopping for ground on your own.
Well, the big thing about Whitetail Properties agents is we're professionals. We're not moonlighters. This is our career. We do it full time. We are familiar with the area, rules, regulations. We know the deer herds. We're all deer hunters. And just having someone that can walk the walk and talk the talk is invaluable. having them there on the ground to evaluate habitat or evaluate cropland or whatever. Just having that expert right there that's familiar with the area is so much better than just dealing with the owner one-on-one, just because their primary goal is to sell that piece of property. They don't care if you're taken care of or not. And that Whitetail Properties agent is going to make sure that that you as a buyer are being taken care of and in the end getting a good deal.
If you'd like to learn more and to see the properties that Dave currently has listed for sale, visit whitetailproperties.com/Skinner. That's SKINNER. All right, and joining us on the line next is Lindsey Thomas Jr. out of Georgia, the Director of Communications with QDMA. Now, Lindsey, in Georgia, what would you say the buck activity has been lately on a scale of 1 to 10?
Spencer, where I've been over the last 2 weeks, it's been fairly low, like a 2 or 3. We're post-rut at this point in most of the areas of Georgia that I hunt, in southeast Georgia, central Georgia, and north Georgia. And it's been very low buck activity. It's been kind of tough, actually.
Well, Lindsey, how about in the rest of the state? Are there some areas that should be expecting to see some rutting activity soon?
Yeah, in southwest Georgia, the southwestern corner of the state, it kind of blends in with some of that late rut activity you see in Alabama and into Mississippi. Most folks know that patches of those states see a very late rut, often even into January and even February in some areas. So southwest Georgia fits into that puzzle and has kind of a December rut. So even right now, as we're speaking, they should be, based on all the data I've ever seen on that, you know, the rut should be happening in some of the southwestern Georgia counties. I haven't hunted down there or talked to anyone there this year, but they should be right on schedule right about now, or if not, maybe a little behind the peak of the rut there. But for most of the state, we are well into post-rut at this point.
For the rest of the state that's in that post-rut, what are some of the favorite food sources to focus on this time of year?
You know, that would be any of the cool season plots that have been planted for deer, particularly the brassicas like rape, kale, turnips, radishes, which most folks that do food plots know that those leafy green plots tend to become more attractive to deer after they've been hit by a good hard frost. And most of the state at this point has had that. Even in South Georgia, where my family's farm is, we got some pretty good frost a couple of weeks ago in late November. It's gotten a little warmer here lately, but those crops, if you have them, are now coming into the pretty well attractive phase. You know, if you planted winter wheat or oats or rye, it'd be the same. If you have standing soybeans you left or standing corn, of course, those are going to be attractive too. Another food source right now that deer seem to be turning back to in many areas are any acorn in the red oak family, which would be your southern red oaks, water oaks, laurel oaks, cherry bark oak, things like that. White oaks, of course, as we know, acorns in the white oak family tend to be more attractive to deer and get gone faster. They are gone now, or they are beneath the leaf litter and have germinated, so they're not of interest to deer anymore. But those red oak acorns are still in the ground, still viable. They have not sprouted. They don't sprout till spring, and they keep longer because they have a higher tannic acid level. So now deer are turning to those where they have them. So if you've got water oaks or other red oak species in your hunting area, check those areas out again and see if you aren't seeing some patterns there. With all of these food sources, Spencer, though, the key now is going to be hunting pressure. If these areas that I'm talking about, if you've got brassicas or winter wheat or an area with red oak acorns or whatever that might be, but you've been hunting it all the past several weeks through the rut and everything, I really doubt you're going to see much activity in those areas. You really need to find some food sources now that have not been hunted or areas that have not been hunted because, you know, late season like this, pressure becomes a big factor. I'm basing that on several food plots that I've got cameras and been hunting. You know, I've got a Moultrie mobile out on one food plot that I hunted over the weekend, and some other friends hunted. No daylight deer activity was seen in those plots that I'm talking about, but I'm getting trail camera pictures as soon as we get in to camp of deer coming in after dark and through the night. So, but those plots were hunted, you know, through hunting season. So again, think back over your historical pressure this season. Try to you know, over these, for the rest of the season, really, the pattern should be any food sources you can find that have not already been heavily hunted.
Well, Lindsay, there's a lot of theories and a lot of lore out there from hunters on the secondary rut. Now, what does science and QDMA say about the secondary rut?
Yeah, it's a real thing. Generally, what it is, Spencer, is doe fawns, does that were born this year, that were born early enough or had good enough resources where they lived to reach a critical body weight during fall and even during December. And in the south, that's about 70 pounds on the hoof. In the north, it's more in the range of about 80 pounds. Doe fawns that, again, had the right conditions and were able to hit that body size before we really get into winter, will come into estrus for the first time. And it is often late. It doesn't usually happen with the peak of the rut. It's usually in December for areas that normally have a November peak rut. And that can often create a, you know, little flurry of rut activity. Bucks can, you know, even though their testosterone levels might have been beginning to drop off, the presence of those estrus doe fawns will spike their interest again. Physiologically, they can kind of crank back up. So you might see chasing, you might hear grunting and vocalizations and does running from bucks and bucks even fighting over these doe fawns. So generally when hunters are seeing that, it's not so much a true second rut as it is these doe fawns coming into estrus. You can have adult does that did not get bred on the first cycle coming back in 30 days later, but generally in most areas, buck to doe ratios today are in pretty good shape, and most of the, quote, second rut that you're seeing is those doe fawns. You know, particularly in areas where you've got good habitat and good herd management, that's what is causing that.
All right, Lindsay. Well, good luck on what's left of your season, and thanks for joining me.
Spencer, thanks so much. Good luck to you, too.
All right, and joining us on the line last is Mike Hunsucker from Heartland Bowhunter in Missouri. Now, Mike, in Missouri, what would you say the buck activity has been lately on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, man, it's been pretty poor, I would say. Maybe a 3, I'd probably say. Yeah, I mean, the main thing this time of year, you know, that we need for buck activity is cold weather. We got the food, and they're trying to get built back up from a long rut. And, but if we don't get the cold weather, the buck activity, at least in daylight, is pretty minimal. So I'm looking forward to some cold weather on the way right now.
Well, you just touched on food sources there. What are some of your favorite food sources to hunt this time of year in Missouri?
Really, you know, my favorite food source this time of year is probably corn. We leave a lot of corn standing, and it's been 5 or 6 years ago Missouri changed the regulations to where you could manipulate the crop, so we can plant corn and then brush hog it down, and that's been a really effective strategy for us trying to shoot them late season with a bow and arrow. You know, we can put up a hay bale blind and put it in the corn. We can mow about, you know, 50 by 50 square, and most of the year are going to be within bow range, so it's a pretty effective way to get them in nice and close late season.
Now, have you noticed a change in bedding this time of year as opposed to what it was back mid-November during the rut?
It kind of depends on the area. The food sources that do have quality bedding close by, the deer seem to be bedding there, you know, not moving too terribly far from those food sources. But the food sources where, you know, there's not the great, the best bedding due to the all the foliage being off the trees, they're still sticking to, you know, some of the tighter, little thicker areas. But, you know, they definitely, this time of year, they definitely prefer to travel less, it seems like.
Well, from your social media, it looks like you've been on some doe patrol lately. And on those hunts, have you seen any kind of secondary rutting activity?
I've seen a little bit of bumping around chasing. Nothing to lead me to think that it was a doe that was in heat for sure. Mainly just, you know, younger bucks messing around. But I have on some trail cameras. It's been, I don't know, probably a week or 10 days ago. Had a buck that was locked down with a doe that wasn't leaving her. It was actually a fawn, so I'm assuming she was coming into heat for the first time this year. And he was on her, wasn't leaving her side.
So what weather patterns in particular are you looking for late season like this? Just cold weather in general, or would you like some snow as well, or maybe some wind?
Yeah, I mean, cold weather is the number one thing in my opinion. But also, yeah, it doesn't hurt to have snow, especially we have a lot of standing beans as well, and you know, anytime you get a little bit of snow cover, it covers up all the other available food sources that's laying on the ground, and so standing crops really get hot that time of year. So, you know, it just depends on what you have available, what food sources. But yeah, I mean, cold and snow and high pressure, you get a combination of all those, and it's magical. You touched on the wind too. Wind is another big thing that man, it's been brutal lately for us. We've had some, you know, decent steady winds, and then last light they just die. And then, I mean, the deer are so skittish this time of year. You know, everything is loud and crunchy, and there's no vegetation, and they've been hunted all year. And so, you know, really having a nice steady wind really will help cover up some of that any noises, and help just make the deer feel more comfortable for whatever reason. You know, you'd think they would be, you think they'd be more calm when the wind is calm and they can hear really well. But when you have a nice steady 10-mile-an-hour wind or whatever, that seems to be the time when they're, you know, the most calm and they're in their element.
Well, I know you still have a buck tag, and your wife and Sean as well. And with us approaching, you know, the last 30 days of the season, will you do anything really aggressive, like hunting mornings at this point, or will you stick strictly with evenings?
Yeah, I don't mess with mornings really much this time of year. I would if I had something to lead me to believe that I'd, you know, be able to kill a buck in the morning. It's just tough, like I said, with the short travel from food to bed. And a lot of times, you know, they're going back to bed sometimes before daylight. So it just makes it difficult. So don't mess too much with mornings. But as far as getting aggressive, I mean, you know, yeah, we definitely, you know, when it gets down to the wire, we try to make it count. But, you know, a lot of times we're relying heavily on trail cameras and just waiting for everything to be right, because access is super tough this time of year without bumping deer. So, you know, you got to hunt smarter, not harder.
Well, going forward then, this next week or so, Mike, what do you think that buck activity will be on a scale of 1 to 10 in Missouri?
Over the next week, I would say it's going to skyrocket. We have our first real solid cold front coming through, looks like. And I'd have to say it's probably going to be probably an 8. I'd give it a 9 or 10 if we had a bunch of snow coming. But, you know, highs in the 30s, lows in the teens, all coinciding with Christmas. So we're going to be having a dip out on some Christmas parties and stuff. But, no, we'll make sure that we do our best to get in the woods and capitalize on the cold front. But hopefully it's not going to shoot back up. I mean, we've had some, you know, the past couple of weeks, some 50, 60 degree days on a regular basis. I mean, it's just now dropping into the upper 40s right now, and the sun's been down for about an hour. So it's been unseasonably warm.
All right, Mike. Well, I like your optimism, and I hope that translates to some tags punch for Heartland Bowhunter. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Good luck, everybody.
All right, before we move on, I want to take a quick break here to thank our partners at Maven Optics for their support of this podcast. And also want to let you know about a couple great deals coming from Maven for the holidays right now. First and foremost, Maven is offering through December 31st, 15% all of their C-Series binoculars. And the new C-Series, which they just came out with this year, are their more mid-level price point binocular. And I got a pair of these myself this year. I've been testing them, and I got to say that the quality of optic you're getting is darn near close to the very top tier that I've ever experienced. But at the same point, you're talking about a price point that is much more reasonable than you see from almost any other high-end binocular or optic out there. We're talking $300 and change price point for their C1 binocular, which is the one I'm using. So terrific bino. Mid-level price point that I think is really reasonable. And like I said, right now through December 31st, 15% off. So definitely check that out if you're in the market for a new bino this season. And then secondly, free custom upgrades on all of their B and S series optics. So you pay for your frame, you know, the basic binocular, but then all the customizations you want, the custom colors and camo, whatever you want on that bino, those upgrades are free. So both of these promos are live through December 31st. Check it out at mavenbuilt.com.
And that concludes this week's episode of Wired to Hunt Rut Radio. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And this is the last Rut Radio episode of 2017. Now, Mark and I will be back at the beginning of January, and we're going to have one episode that kind of recaps the entire season and takes a macro look at the whitetail year in review. We'd like to thank our sponsors at Sitka, Matthews, Maven, Yeti, Whitetail Properties, Whitetail Institute, Hunterra, and Trophy Ridge, and we thank you guys for listening. As always, stay wired to hunt.
So before we move on, let's take a quick second to thank our partners at Whitetail Properties.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.